And welcome to another motherfucking episode of the Quaid Thanks Podcast. We're back in Lubbock, dudes. Love it to be back in Lubbock. Of course, we're here at the Blue Light 1806 Buddy Holly Avenue. Shout out to my Blue Light family. Of course, shout out to our sponsors. Every episode, Ironclad Custom Services, Texas Gypsy Shirts, Shake Music Zine. You guys rock. Y'all rock so hard. Thank you so much for everything that you guys do. And your mom for listening to the podcast. Thanks to her, too. But my guest this week, this episode, a dude I look up to a whole lot. Somebody that I highly respect. Very well-spoken, very well-written dude. The owner, operator, and senior badass of the New Slang Podcast, Thomas Mooney. What do you know, dude?
I guess not much. I don't know. I don't know about all that looking up stuff. But
well, you know, a lot of people have... You know, you do your podcast, and you're based here out of Lubbock. And when I was living here, I was, you know, was based out of Lubbock. And a lot of people, it wasn't necessarily a comparison, but it was like, oh, you have a podcast, and he has a podcast. And they figured there was, like, this competition. And the best way I could describe it to people was, like, number one, we do, at least in my opinion, we kind of do completely different formats of our podcasts. Because, number one, you're a lot more knowledgeable and well-spoken and smarter than I am. And I'm definitely kind of like a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants style with this thing. So I think it definitely, you know, we kind of appease not two different demographics, but like if you want the smart version, you've got this. You know, with the loud version, I've got this.
Well, there's still like, there's 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
So like my podcast, regardless whatever podcast you're listening to, that's maybe like an hour of your day that it's taken up of a week. You know what I mean? So there's plenty of time for other podcasts and other forms of media to consume. So, I mean, I've never really thought about the competition aspects of it, you know what I mean?
I never did either, because I kind of thought of it same deal as like all the artists here in town. It's like,
yeah,
we have enough room for there to be more than one guitar player or bass player or drummer or singer from Lubbock. Like there's plenty of fucking room, man. There's plenty to talk about.
Yeah, it's not football. It's
oh my god,
you know, it's
sports stress me out, man. I'm not a big sports person. I love tech sports, obviously, because I'm a Lubbock cat. But like, I don't have a professional team for any sport that I'm a big fan of. I don't know who won the Super Bowl last year. I don't know, but there's this guy I work with that is like, all he listens to all day is sports talk radio.
Yeah.
And it stresses me out that like, somebody will know all the stats on a random ass player from like 6 years. Like I that's awesome that people know that kind of stuff, but it doesn't click that way in my brain. So like, it gives me instant like stress when somebody's like, oh yeah, 987, blah 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 blah, so many rushing yards and this and that, and you're like, oh, that's a lot to digest.
As a kid, that's how I was able to like just memorize stats like nobody else, basically.
Yeah, because you like sports quite a bit.
I mean, I like sports, but I also, it's strange because like as I've grown older, I care less about the game itself, as far as like the 60 minutes, the 48 minutes, and I care more about the soap opera around sports, or like the, I say soap opera, but I mean we're talking about like, you know, the transactions, this is like the boring stuff of like the labor unions versus the owners, like, because I don't know, like there's a lot of drama that happens in those aspects. But I also love, like, growing up, there wasn't really analytics about basketball. I mean, there was, you had like field goal percentage and stuff like that, but the analytics age has really taken off in the last 10, 15 years, and that's also really, really interesting. And it's all these like super boring numbers about
somebody has so many assists this season.
It's one of those things. Well, no, not even that. It's like, there's a lot deeper than that. And there's a lot, like, it would be hard to explain in an hour of like different,
he's X percent like, within so many feet, you know, sort of stuff. Like,
well, like there's the shooting percentage of like of people, like a big number obviously is like a kind of like your average kind of thing is for like most people run by is like a PER. Like your PER is like how many points and how many, like what you're responsible for in a team setting.
Yeah.
Some people hate it, some people love it, but that's kind of like the norm of the analytic crowd. But there's also like other kind of rating systems, and then there's like, I don't know, like a better example of like just how fun these can be is like when Klay Thompson scored like 63 points in a game, he only took 7 dribbles. So that's like a really efficient he's not like holding on to the ball,
right,
pounding it into the ground like say like a Russell Westbrook would be to get 63. You imagine like scoring 63 points and dribbling right. the ball literally seven times. You know,
that's great. Just get the man the ball and shoot yeah. where he's at. Like that yeah. just that shows his skill as a shooter.
And so that's what I like as far as sports goes. I like it's weird. Like I said, I love like the number crunching aspect, but then I also love like just the drama of it all.
Okay. I think if I enjoyed sports more, I could, because I can nerd out on a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Like I'm okay. I love cartoons, and so I can do that. Like, oh yeah, this episode, this voice actor, blah blah blah, stuff like
yeah.
that. So I can totally, I understand the nerding out thing.
Yeah.
But just I wish I could do that more with sports. I think that's definitely be more acceptable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can go into a bar and with a game on and know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That's the thing though too, is like I hate watching games in bars. Like people always invite me to like Pat would be big time about like, hey, come watch a tech football or you know whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I gotta watch it at my house. I'm sorry. I gotta watch it by myself. There's too many, not necessarily distractions, but it's like the...
There's too much shit going on.
Proverbial, like, people talking over stuff, you know?
Right.
Which makes, like I said earlier, I don't necessarily care as much about the game-to-game or the day-to-day games, but I still love, like, watching. When I'm watching a game, I'm gonna be watching, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
You like to zone in and pay attention
yeah.
and like actually focus on what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's I can see that with some shows. Sometimes you go to the bar and you see friends, you get distracted and you wind up missing half the set and
right.
you know, stuff like that. Like I could see that.
Yeah.
Where that kind of comes into play there.
Yeah.
But here's what I've been thinking, man. I wonder why some venues don't like set up like. Well, let's just throw some random names out here. Let's say that Parker McCollum's playing Billy Bob's, right? And then why don't we set up like a live stream from the show where you pay for a membership? So like you live in South Dakota, you can't make that concert, but you'd like to go. So for the cost of a ticket, you get like a week membership to this streaming service or, mm-hmm. you know, to the stream. Like I think that'd be a great way for, you know, like introverts, like people who want to go see shows, but like, I'd love to see this concert, but I don't want to be around the crowd.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around the people with social anxiety, you know, or like, you
right.
know, people who are like, I can't drink anymore. I don't want to go to a bar. Sort of thing. I think that'd be kind of a neat sort of thing to see happen.
Yeah. I think the obvious answer is just because it's like too much work. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
And,
like,
and you want butts in your
like,
bar.
Cause... Yeah, we're already doing all this. It's what I was kind of thinking of the comparison is like with the rise of Netflix and the rise of HBO Go especially,
mm-hmm.
or just like how you can rent movies from whatever cable network you are.
Right.
People go to the movies less.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it would be, like, you know, actually, like, a deterrent to be going out to go see shows.
People wouldn't go as much, and they'd...
Yeah, and you would, like, lose more on the bar sales.
I could definitely
see
that.
Venues are open because of bar sales, basically, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're 30 and younger, you're going to the bar
yeah.
a lot more often. Maybe there has to be a stipulation that you have to be over 45 to, I don't know.
Yeah, or
I'm kidding
within
about that,
X,
yeah.
like a further yeah. than so many miles away from the venue
yeah,
sort
yeah.
of thing. And put like a
that would actually
distance
be,
parameter
yeah.
sort of thing on it.
But I think people would probably get around it.
Oh, it's as easy as typing in a different
so,
zip code.
Yeah.
You know, sort of thing. But I think it'd be an interesting concept. You know,
yeah.
as you go to a lot, like, I go to some of these venues, and they'll have cameras set up to where on TVs around the bar or around the venue,
yeah.
they'll have, you know, a stream of the show going on, you know, going on a TV or something. I just think that'd be kind of a cool next step. I don't know, I'm just spitballing.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I honestly think it's just because, like, I'm sure there's been discussions about this with people who own bars or managing venues, and then they're just like, yeah, but, like, we'd have to do all this stuff. Actually do it like it just takes time and
yeah.
you know
and
what
like
I mean?
You said it'd take people
yeah.
out of the bar and
yeah.
kind of in the long run is
well maybe
aren't buying
take, I don't know if it would or not but like it may take people out of the bar
right
but I don't know like maybe there is something entirely different there's like I guess there may be where I said like HBO and stuff like that is taking people out of the movie theaters
right.
at the end of the day it's still a screen there's obviously something visceral about watching a show
yeah.
in person and watching it on TV. So maybe there is it wouldn't take people away. You know, because you're not like, it's not like coming to the blue light and watching X band on a screen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so no, like, it's, maybe there is. It's a completely different vibe. Like, I mean, I would much rather see a show in person, but like one reason I'm thinking about it is where I live up in Oklahoma now, we live about in the middle of nowhere, and I haven't established a home bar yet, which is great because I've cut my drinking in third easily.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going out, I'm not spending money, I'm not drinking like a fish, which is great, you know, but, you know, oh, so-and-so's playing a blue light on Friday. Well, shit, I'm 6 hours away. I'd love to, you know, pay $10, $5, whatever, and, yeah. you know, watch for 90 minutes, you know, be like, that'd be cool. But, you know, at the same time, you know, like you said, it kind of takes some, could take butts out of the seats, yeah. metaphorically.
Yeah. I think here, though, I mean, like, with a limited capacity on
yeah, how many people. Yeah, because Blue Light's not a big room. For people who are listening and haven't been here, it's fucking tiny.
I think it would add a whole lot, and you would just probably have Casey or whoever the sound guy is that night
running all through front of house,
you know, because that would be like obviously the place where to make it uncomplicated.
Yeah, you know. Well, I mean, it's like when they did the 24 frames thing here for the singer songwriter comp.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But you've been a guest judge of the singer songwriter competition before, correct?
Yeah. I kind of helped Dustin run it as far as getting people signed up and all the logistics aspects.
Yeah. Well, you're a big part of this local scene, whether you realize it or not, you know, yeah. But you're a pretty big part of what's going on here, man.
I don't like necessarily, I've kind of...
Nobody takes compliments.
I don't necessarily like the... Well, no, I was going to say, I don't necessarily like doing the judging aspects anymore.
Right.
Because it's just...
it's hard to judge art, man.
Well, not only that, but... It's like it's a lot larger commitment, obviously.
Yeah.
And you're kind of also, I guess like what I'm saying is like it's sometimes easier to if somebody's, for example, like if Charlie Shafter's a judge, you know, he lives in Fort Worth, he's not necessarily going to see these people every day, and like it or not, like a lot of people kind of get butthurt sometimes and are a little more or less like they won't say hi to you for a couple weeks and you're like, I didn't do anything, like you're
right, I'm not the deciding factor on here. But I've never been asked to guest judge anything musically, which has come in my favor because I'm with you, like I don't think I could handle it, you know. It hurts somebody's feelings, or you know, somebody say you picked favorites or shit like that. When I was working for the radio and we'd do like live giveaways and shit, like there was a ticket giveaway that we were doing, and I legitimately pulled my friend's name out of the box. And for days, people were like, yeah, you rigged it. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, here's the, like, I showed the ticket to the people there, and I was still getting shit for it. I'm like, dude, come
on. I think, honestly, sometimes people also don't realize that a lot of these giveaways, ticket giveaways, or like whatever kind of giveaways, there's a lot less people who actually enter than you would think.
Oh, absolutely.
And if
we'll be giving away 10 tickets and maybe get 16 signups.
Yeah.
Sort of deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, a lot of times it's people that you know who are going to sign up just because they, you know them because they're listening all the time.
Exactly.
You know, or they're following.
You have a following,
and,
so, you know.
Yeah. And,
like Taylor Anderson, you know, she's won how many things from the Rebel giveaways? Like I think she's won Steamboat and Larry Joe and a couple other tickets, you know, local stuff like that. But she's always calling in. She's always putting in. She puts in the work to do it, you know. But like you said, there may be 20 people that put in. Yeah. Those are pretty good odds.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, for some reason, I think, like, people think it's like a lottery. Like, you know, and it's...
You against an infinite number.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not necessarily the case. It's... It can be 25 people. It can be 10 people.
Right.
Who ask for, like, put their name in. So, I don't know.
But how did you... Because you've written for a whole bunch. Of course, you do your own blog with New Slang. Correct, right? You're still writing with New Slang some?
Here and there. Just, it depends on what I'm not necessarily, like, just writing daily or weekly on there or anything. Right. If there's something cool that comes up that I want to do that... I can't get it on anywhere else, I'll write it on there. But
right.
Well, not necessarily.
Who all have you written for recently? Like, kind of give us a little bit of your pedigree here. For some people who aren't familiar with what you do and what you've done.
I guess for, like, the last year, I've been writing for Rolling Stone Country, and then the last 6 months or so, I guess it's been about 6 months, I've been doing some stuff for Texas Monthly, and those are the main people right now. Being a freelance guy is a lot harder than I think people realize.
Yeah.
Like, I've reached out to a bunch of different magazines and people, and you get a whole lot of response back of, you know, oh, yeah, we love your work, but we don't have, like, the resources.
Right.
So it's, like, it's one of those things where, I don't know. Like, I...
Have you thought about, like, a weekly column or something with different...
I mean,
like, a weekly write-up thing? Like, if you kind of... Like, if you, I guess, chased that recently? I don't know. I'm shitty with words right now.
Yeah.
I got kind of drunk last night.
No, I don't know. It's the way it goes is you pitch things to them.
Right.
That come across. Like, what happens with me is I get, like, a bunch of emails from different PR people or that I know. And usually it's bands that you've had an established, relationship with, so they pitch you a whole lot of stuff, and then you pitch to the people you work with,
right?
And so that they literally do that with everyone that they kind of work with, you know, the PR people. And so it's like, oh, I've got this guy who does Rolling Stone, I've got this guy who kind of does American Songwriter, I got this other person who does Paste, and so and so on.
Right.
And so then you kind of like pitch to them, and then you pitch to wherever you write for, and then they say yes or no. And like, I think a lot of the times people think that like you're getting everything you want to write about. And the simple fact is now is like maybe when you're writing for kind of a smaller place, a smaller outlet, they're wanting to get their name more out there. So it's like, yes.
So they want more content.
They want a whole lot more content. And I was telling someone the other day, it's like literally like 95% of the stuff I pitch to any of these people, we don't end up using, either not necessarily because they don't like the music or they don't like the person, the artist, or me, or you know what I mean? It's more of a, they have to be selective because they're Rolling Stone or they're Texas Monthly, you know?
Right.
So.
There is that much more material, necessarily, but there's more stuff to choose from.
Yeah, because they're getting obviously offers to do. For example, like the Mike and the Moon Pies record,
dude,
that came out as a quote unquote surprise record.
Yeah, I didn't know it was coming.
And it had like the quote unquote, the big feature piece from Rolling Stone about the making of the record, and
because they had the London String Quartet or London String
London
Symphony or
Symphony
something,
Symphony Orchestra. Yeah,
yeah.
And they recorded at Abbey Road Studios and. So obviously they had the story before
they knew what they were doing.
So like that was obviously a setup well in advance for that story,
right?
That other venue or other publications may have not had the access to, or may have not, you know, because they also.
So I did guess, you do that write up?
No. The Rolling Stone Country editor, Joseph Hudick, who's kind of like my guy I go through.
Okay,
he's the one who wrote that up.
Is he how you got hooked in with Rolling Stone?
I got through Rolling Stone basically because Wide Open Country, I'd been writing there for about a year, and they decided to go in a different direction and basically let go of the entire writing staff on like one day.
Huh.
And I mean, I have no hard feelings.
Because it happens, man.
Because obviously it happens, and it but also like at the same time, they let go about, you know, 6-7 people, and it made you, well, at least for me, I know, like, it was a comfort thing, right? Like, and it made you go out and, like, reach out to people, and that, like, a sense of vulnerability to ask people that you work with, like, hey, do you have any leads on a job, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, one of my good buddies who I had been working with, he's a PR guy, you know, emailed me, and he had emailed me before about like a lot of my writing. He had emailed me like, hey, is there anything I can do? You know, I've got a buddy who, Joseph Hudick, who's like in charge of Rolling Stone Country. you want me to like reach out? And it was like, yes, please, you know.
Right.
And
the worst thing you're gonna hear is no. Why the fuck not?
And so like that's what I mean. Like I've reached out to a bunch of different publications because like you just have to do that. Like there's no other way to. You kind of have like your resume updated.
Yeah.
Or like and like I said, like the last time I had updated my resume, it was like one of those like, fuck, man, I've got to. I basically need to just rewrite this because I don't even know, like, I need to, it's so obsolete at this point. I don't know.
So well, I mean, you're constantly working, yeah. You know, it seems at least once a month I'm seeing a new piece from you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and also, like, I would say, like, just the pay is better from a lot of these places, so that's a added benefit, you know?
Heck yeah.
So, yeah.
Word. And then you do the New Slang podcast. Why did you want to start doing a podcast?
Well, the podcast kind of was an idea that was I was throwing around, thinking about doing just because I think you, in any kind of venture, you naively kind of go into it. There's a little bit of ignorance to, like, whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, when I started New Slang, there was some obvious ignorance of, like, yeah, I can do this, and this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
Or it'll be easier than I thought it was. I knew it was going to be hard, but I thought it was still going to be easier than I
initially
thought.
How hard can it be?
Yeah. And so the same thing, same premise with the podcast is like, well, I mean, it'll probably be easier on time. You're not having to transcribe a whole lot of this stuff. You can set it up as a podcast, yada, yada, yada. And then there's obviously the learning curve of actually doing it. And there's a lot, like we were kind of talking about earlier, before you started recording about it. There's a lot more steps than just, like, hitting record and then, here you go, guys.
Yeah, you don't just plug in the computer, press a button, yeah. And go on.
So, I guess how I started the podcast was, I had kind of thrown the idea around and Evan Felker had kind of, I guess, called my bluff on it a little bit on... this was a couple years ago. He wanted to do an episode.
It was the street show, wasn't it, when y'all did the first episode?
No, it was... the first episode we did was... They had played Charlie B's.
Oh, okay.
And this was a couple years ago. He wanted to do the podcast, and he was actually going to fly down here to do it for, like, a one-day deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Then it was like one of those like, well, shit, you guys are playing here like a couple weeks from here anyways. I think it was like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So we ended up doing it when they were here. And so that's really like, but also I guess I had bought like all the equipment I had beforehand. And I was trying to figure it out. Me and Parker, I was having Parker Morrow help me figure how to do all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because obviously he's been a sound engineer, sound guy up here, well before playing with Red, and so he kind of had a lot of the, this is how you need to do this, you need to get this, and but it was also like, I don't necessarily knew if he knew how to record into a fucking MacBook or anything.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh well, how do we get the. Obviously, you have the mixer. Well, how do you get the mixer to like start recording actually in the channels? And
it's a learning curve.
Yeah.
That's one reason I use this device because it's this little Zoom that I use. It's so simple and it doesn't. It's not the best quality recording, but it's not garbage. It's better than like recording something with an iPhone.
Yeah.
But it's super simple. It gets complicated at least for me because I'm not very smart. But after we put it in the computer and we have to do any editing or stuff like that, but.
Yeah,
you know, I don't have to go through an interface. I don't have to set up mics. I don't have to worry about general levels. I don't have to worry about recording from or getting from my interface, you know, to my recording software and making sure I'm in the right formats and blah 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 blah. That was one thing I learned doing radio was how it's super complicated to record.
Yeah.
any audio.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I've got like I guess a couple of different setups now, and it just depends on where we are.
Yeah.
Like if. And I know, like, sometimes my quality is not that great just because of shit happening around.
Yeah, I mean, ambient noise, it's unavoidable sometimes.
Like, if we're in a quiet room like this right now, obviously this is going to sound, you know, pretty damn good.
versus in front of the back patio with like background music or you know.
So like now I have like just a blue Yeti that I'll just plug straight into my Mac to record, and it just has, you know, like three channels on it. So I just turn on two channels and go from there.
Nice.
But you know, if there was a little bit more background, then I'm like, well, let me just set up the everything because it'll be a little bit easier to control what's happening. So yeah, long story short, I guess I had all the equipment, and then I had to. Evan wanted to do the podcast, and so then it gave me like that, you know, the countdown started like counting down on. You have to like
X days
really, really know how to figure this shit out. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it started out.
I think it's cool that you had Evan as your first guest. Was that your favorite podcast? I know it's like picking your fucking kids. It's like asking artists what's your favorite song you've written. But what's your favorite podcast you cut? Which one did you have the most fun with or the most interesting talk? Like, which one stands out the most?
I don't know. A lot of people always say they love the BJ Barham, Will Clark Green one. And that one was really fun. That was that one had a whole lot of ambient noise. It was like during a street show here at Blue Light, and we cut it in the pool room. And
there's a lot of just noise in general in that pool room. I've cut a couple podcasts in there. It's just everything that happens just echoes through there for some reason.
But like, you know, people were moving around, like moving, you know, cases of beer and cases of alcohol and water and all kinds of stuff around us, and we were just kind of like set up there doing that podcast. That was a lot of fun. But it's also like, that was a long time ago, so I'm trying to like even think of like what we even talked about really. One that really sticks out that I just really liked from a storytelling perspective was one, it was really kind of short, it was like a 30-minute episode with Bradney Foster, and he just is just a natural speaker. And so, like, you know, I asked maybe 6-7 questions in there, and he would have these, you know, these monologues answering the question, and you'd kind of like feel like we're lost in the woods, and then he'd bring it back around. So he knew exactly what he was talking about the whole time, but because, you know, so a lot of people can just ramble. Obviously, we ramble. But that was a lot of fun. He was very insightful on how things were. And I always said, too, like, after that, and thinking about it whenever I was doing it, I was like, he's also, like, just a really, how's the way to say this? He's like a, like, you didn't really feel like his ego, you know,
he was still humble about shit.
Thumping his chest whenever he would name drop. Because he was name dropping left and right.
Yeah.
And but it would just like be such a natural name drop. You've come across plenty of people who name drop that you're like, oh God.
I mean,
like,
we're guilty of it ourselves, you know, but it's not really name dropping as much as like we were associating with this person at this time.
But you know how like the name dropper was like, what did Willie Nelson have to do with this? Like, why did you bring him, like, the time you met Willie, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, you didn't have to, like, mention that you were friends with Willie Nelson during this.
Right.
But, like, with
Bradley Foster, it wasn't, like, a humble brag shit.
Yeah, it was not, like, a humble brag, really, at all. And it always had to do with the story. And he, obviously, Rodney Foster's met, like, a billion people.
Yeah, he's been playing for a long time.
Yeah. And so, that one right there was fun. That was, trying to think of some other ones. The one I just did with Robert Ellis was really fun.
I haven't listened to that one yet. I've got to. I was planning on listening to it on the way down, but Tyler Childers and Mike and the Pie Shop albums on the same day, and that kind of made up what I was listening to on the way in town.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, yeah. The I like that records come out on Friday now.
Yeah, it was like Tuesdays for everyone.
Yeah. And I think it still may be Tuesday in Europe, but...
Well, Europe's fucking backwards anyway.
But no, actually, I'm wrong on that. I think Europe was always Friday. That's what it was.
Really?
So they had it.
So they had it right.
We were doing it Tuesdays, or maybe it was always Tuesday, and then Europe switched to Friday, and then it was like us for Tuesday and them for Friday for 25 years.
We're just gonna swap it back and forth.
And then we went ahead and moved it back. We decided to join them. It's like us in the metric system kind of thing.
Dude, I wonder if we will ever convert to the metric system. I mean, maybe not. I mean, not obviously. It's not going to be for the next, you know, while, but you know, a couple of centuries. Wonder what. You know, it could be. Who knows?
If we do, it has to like.
It's going to change everything.
Well, I think it would change like very. It would change
the fundamentals of America.
Well, I don't know. I think like if it does change, if we ever do convert, it'll be like, I'm trying to say this nicely. I don't think the baby boomer generation would take it easily.
No, not at
all.
And
so once the baby boomers die out, that's when I think you can actually ask for change with the metric system coming in, because I don't think Gen Xers or millennials or whatever's after millennials honestly give a shit, like, or enough shit about it,
right?
You know,
I mean, once you break it down, it really is a lot simpler.
Yeah,
you know, it's all in tens and hundreds and like even divisible numbers and all that, so it makes sense. But I just wonder.
Yeah,
but you know, of course, you do your write-ups as well. There's two that really stick out in my mind. They're two of my favorite articles that you've written. The first one was on Doug Stone.
Oh.
Of course. We're not even going to go there. I'm just saying, if you want a hell of a read and you want a great mental story to just play through in your head, you just go back and find the New Slang write-up on Doug Stone.
Yeah.
The night he played at Blue Light. It was an interesting night to be here. For sure.
Yeah, the Doug Stone thing, I'm over it. Like,
I know, but it's still one of my favorite things ever.
Well, my favorite part of it is that, like,
just to witness that whole deal was just fucking nuts.
Is every 6 months or so, somebody will bring up Doug Stone, and then, like,
did you think that would be people, like, a defining article when you wrote it?
No, and him and his people will get mad about it, and I'm like, I can't. What do you want me to do about it? I'm not deleting it, and I'm not like going to apologize that you were.
Belligerent.
Yeah, I'm glad you're sober now, but like, that's what happened.
Yeah, it's not like we took away all of the fucking Motley Crue stories when Nikki Sixx got his shit together.
It's the last time it was pulled back up.
It was recently.
It was just a couple of. I guess it was about a month ago. After they bitched about it and stuff, I posted the. I guess it's like the Grand Theft Auto. What's after Vice City?
I don't know, man. I haven't owned it.
Okay, anyways, it's like the meme.
I don't video game
it's
at all.
It's the meme of like, oh shit, or oh shit, here we go again. Mm-hmm. That's like what I posted out, because I was just like, dude.
I thought this was buried.
I thought that we were done with this. So what's the other one?
The one you did, Flatland and Dalton were playing in Midland. And you did a write-up of Dalton backstage, just kind of like his... As somebody who's on the road with Dalton, I noticed a lot of things, you know, where you're like, you know, cigarette talk, water, cigarette, you know what I mean? Like, that's... But just the way you observe things and write things down, I mean, obviously that makes you a writer, because I'm not a writer, but we can all write words, describe things, but the way you do it, that one especially, really, just the way it was written...
Yeah,
you know, especially being close enough to the parties you're writing about. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a very accurate and artful description.
Yeah.
Of how that shit was going down then.
Yeah, that one was, because it was Flatland, Dalton, and then Wade Bowen.
Yeah, that's right. Wade Bowen's on that.
And it was a very, it was an interesting time simply because of where we were in Lubbock music.
Yeah.
Because...
We were in the middle of uprising.
Flatland was not the Flatland you know today.
Right.
It was, you know, they drove down in Clutto's truck, you know, and...
Now they're on a bus.
Huh?
Now they're on a bus.
Yeah, and then, of course, Dalton was... Were you there? I don't think
he was. I wasn't at that show, but no, he was in the van, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in the van, and... it was, I don't know, it was really interesting to see... Obviously, Dalton was drinking profusely at that
time. We were all going pretty hard.
And
at that point in our lives. That was a very furry year.
Yeah. I think, like, I still come down to it being the biggest differences you could see between Dalton and Flatland at that precise moment was just all on their set list.
Yeah.
You know, Flatlands were printed out copies and there was stuff highlighted on them, and it had like what they were in, you know,
right, keys,
yeah, and like there was like the they had basically everything kind of, you know, pre-scripted,
right,
you know,
very professional.
You could see where I think there was even like, you know, there's going to be a in between these three songs, I'll talk to the crowd a little bit more, you know.
Yeah.
There was even shit like that. And then with Dalton's, it was, you know, marker on notepad.
Yeah, handwritten and drawn.
Handwritten, and it was just like, there were songs marked out on copies, and it was just, you know, scatterbrained, right?
Right.
And, yeah, that's obviously.
But it's, you know, if you know them personally, Cleto is very calculated.
Yeah.
And very, you know, this is how it's done sort of thing. And Dalton is very much so fly by the seat of your fucking pants. Let's do this sort of thing. But the way you described it, I just, again, that's what's one of my favorite articles that you've ever done. I dig it.
Yeah. And of course, like, Cleto is a lot more reserved as a person.
Yes.
You know, and that's one of those things where a lot of people kind of, I can see. One of the things I'm really big into, I guess, is the way we project our thoughts on artists.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we think, like, you know, you're a musician, you should be really eccentric, or like, you sing these songs about, you know, love and all this stuff, or you sing about, so you, that's how you are, right? Or you, like, you.
Yeah, you kind of give them a painted image.
Yeah, and so we project a whole lot of our own thoughts on what these songs are on the artist. And I think, like, we've done that big time with Evan Felker. But I can see that happening with Cleto, too. Is like, because Cleto's a very reserved guy and quiet. And not that you can't talk to him or anything.
Right.
But also, like,
he's not the loudest guy at the party.
Yeah, and if you did come across him and, you know, we're like super fanny and you just didn't know him, he's going to be like cordial, but like he's not necessarily going to be like talking with you for 30 minutes about your life, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's not the most talkative person. It's not anything bad. And, he's, like you said, he's reserved.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, a lot of people kind of do the same thing with me, is thinking I'm, you know, angry or something, or like I'm, you know, just judging people in the corner.
Yeah, no, I see you as a watcher. Like, you know, more kind of, I hate to use this word, but kind of like a wallflower. Like, you're always observing, you know.
Yeah.
I think people will see that as like a judging from the corner, whereas I see it as like you're like a sentry observing and sponging in everything that's happening.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people sometimes will be like, they'll think like I'm pretentious or something, or like I'm being a dick to people. Simply because, like, I don't know you, so I don't have anything to say about to you about what.
Yeah,
well, I'm not going to sit out and talk about the weather.
Like, it's fucking humid today, you know, bud. Like,
you know, that's a good beard that you have there. Nothing, right. You know. I just think that's like a waste of talk. You know, like,
yeah, there's.
So I don't know. I guess like I don't even know where we're going with that about the perspective. I guess like we just kind of project our ideas on who these people. Another person is obviously like Ko Wetzel. Like, we project all these ideas on who...
Everybody thinks he's some crazy monster. Or, especially after this balloon festival shit. I think that's more funny than anything. Like, I find more humor in it than...
Yeah. I would say that... did Ko know it was like a... That's the first thing I would, like, ask.
From what I understand, he was aware. Again, I wasn't there. I'm not in contact with anybody in Ko's people about the event. I haven't asked. It's not my fucking business.
Yeah.
But... I could, from what I've heard how it went down, that's exactly how I would have pictured it going down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it, I think he knew, but again, it's kind of like a fuck you, I'm gonna do what I want sort of thing. And that's,
It's not necessarily like even a, did what was going through their minds beforehand, do they know? It was, it's probably more of a like, did the balloon festival have a good idea of what was going on beforehand.
I mean, whoever booked him may have known, but did the people he was booking
and I would say, like, I think, like, they're kind of playing it, they're talking out on both ends of their mouth, or at opposite ends of their mouth, you know, apologizing, yada, yada, yada. But I think, like, they're also, they raked in the money too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they got paid for that fucking show.
You know, it's the, I was telling somebody earlier, like, so Coe cusses at the balloon race, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're getting all this free publicity. Did you know about the balloon race?
No, I didn't, in
your life?
I'm New Mexican, bro. I thought the only balloon shit that happened is Balloon Fiesta in Albuquerque. Yeah. I didn't know there was like hot air balloon things elsewhere.
I didn't know there was that. And of course, like, I'm not from East Texas, so maybe it's a little bit more of a thing that's known.
Right, in that area.
Yeah. Obviously, it has to be. Because they're also kind of, they've been running for, I think they said, you know, 30-something years.
Right.
But at the same time,
I'd never fucking heard of it until...
I don't know if anyone really knew of it before Coe christened it with... Yeah.
They're either going to have incredible or very minimal attendance next year.
Yeah. So I guess, like, I would also say, if you guys really felt bad, you should give everyone your money back.
Exactly.
Your money back, you know.
But I haven't seen any return posts. So... But what's next for you, man? What have you got going next? Any podcasts? Any big write ups you've got planned? Any trips? Shows you're looking forward to? What's next on your radar?
I guess technically we're speaking in the future here.
Yeah, this won't come out for a couple of weeks. Easy.
It'll be either like the week of, the week after, or the week before. I should be having a couple of new pieces in Texas Monthly.
Nice.
Or on Texas Monthly. One about Charlie Crockett and his new album, and then one with Paul Coffin and his new record.
Nice. So, I would love to cut a podcast with both of those dudes eventually.
Yeah. I'm not done one with Paul in forever.
I like your Charlie Crockett podcast.
Yeah, I've had a couple with Charlie there that have been... The recent one, we did it on his bus, and it was after his surgery and everything. Mm-hmm. So that's, I guess, what's going to be more about this new piece, because obviously he's got this new record out, and there's not necessarily anything on this record that is very much a, you know, hey, I had heart surgery, and like, you know,
right,
even if you don't think you're, it's one of those things where I kind of think, like, was he in danger of dying in a, like, yeah, basically, right?
Right. So, like, but he's nonchalant about it, which is pretty cool.
It adds another... There's nothing necessarily on the record that's setting that up, basically, you know?
Right.
But I think that, like, it gave him some new...
A new fire to write with, kind of.
Yeah, some new appreciation, you know? And you can see a lot of the appreciation come through, like, songs about where he's from and his family and stuff like that. So,
right.
Yeah. It's a great record. So, he's, yeah, like I said, like, one of the pieces will be with him and the other one will be about Paul. And
he's got a couple new songs out that I dig.
Yeah.
Is the full record out yet?
No, he's got two songs. Like,
There's that Cocaine Country Dancing, and there's that other one. I haven't listened to that one. I like that Cocaine Country Dancing.
Both records are coming out September 6th, I believe.
Okay,
or sweet. It's like September 6th and September, whatever the next Friday is.
Hell yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, so I'm supposed to go and hang out with Paul for a couple days. That's the cool thing about Texas Monthly, too, is, like, they're wanting you to go out and actually...
Kick it with them.
Yeah, hang out with these people for days at a time to get a better story, I guess, you know.
I would love to do that eventually. I mean, like, especially with the podcast. Like, go spend, you know, go on a weekend run with somebody, and then at the end of the weekend, we cut the podcast. You know what I mean? I think it gives you more material to work with. You know what I mean? It familiarizes you with the project, you know, or with, you know, the content and everything. I think I'm super excited for you that you have this opportunity, and I can't think of somebody that would do a better job.
Well, thank you, yeah.
So... We'll
see how it goes, or how it went, because we're talking in the future.
Yeah,
so
fucking time travel, man.
So,
but where can we find you online? It's about time for me to get another beer, and I owe you a shot. So,
just follow me on Twitter @_newslang.
Okay.
Facebook, you can just search newslang, and it'll be there.
And of course, you have the New Slang podcast on all formats.
Yeah. Just search New Slang podcast. And then newslanglubbock.com for other stuff.
So, hell yeah. We all make sure to show this dude some love and check out his podcast because he's obviously a lot more smarter and knowledgeable than I am. I enjoy it. I learn something every time I listen. So thank you so much for coming on, dude.
Yeah, of course.
Let's catch a fucking drink.
We'll do that.
Hell yeah. Well, this has been another motherfucking episode of the Quaid Things podcast. Hug your mom, pet your dog, don't be an asshole. We'll catch you guys next week.